Rambam Part 5. This is our last session on the life of the Rambam, the major works of the Rambam, and his essential beliefs. In our last session, we mentioned that the Rambam wrote the Igeres Trias HaMesim, his letter regarding resurrection of the dead, when some people misinterpreted his views that he wrote in the Mishnah Torah when he said that the Olam Haba is a world where there are no bodies. And some misinterpreted that to mean that the Rambam believed that Olam Haba is the world in which we live after the Mashiach comes. And that world is not going to be physical resurrection. But really, the Rambam holds that Olam Haba is not the world following the resurrection, following the Messianic era, but Olam Haba, according to the Rambam at least, is the world where we go when we pass away. And that is a completely spiritual and non-physical world where our souls are detached from our bodies. In the context of this discussion, the Rambam makes clear his view that the Messianic era is a normal physical world. The Rambam is of the opinion, he follows Shmuel in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, the Rambam Hilchos Malachim Perek Yud Beis, Halacha Beis states, Amru Chachamim Ein Bein Ha'olam Hazeh Limos HaMashiach Ela Shibud Malchios Bilvad. The only difference between this world and the Messianic era is that we are no longer going to be subservient to the other nations. And in his commentary on Maseches Sanhedrin, in Perek Yud, in his introduction to the Mishnah there, he writes that Tchias HaMesim Yeson Miyasodas Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, resurrection of the dead, is a fundamental belief from the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Ein Das Ven Keshe Yim Ha'umah HaYehudit L'misha Ein Eino Ma'amin B'kach. There is no religion, no connection with the Jewish nation to someone who doesn't believe in this. Ela Shehi LaTzadikim. But rather, this is He believes that resurrection of the dead will only be for the righteous, and he cites the Midrash and Bereishis Rabbah to that effect. And the Rambam writes very clearly about the Messianic era. He says, "V'lo yishtarev mtzius shum navar b'kfish huata." Nothing will change in reality in the Messianic era from what exists now. Zulati shetei amachos Yisrael, except for the Jewish kingdom. And he cites the passage from Chazal that Ein Bein Ha'olam Hazeh Limos HaMashiach El Shubud Malchios Bevad. The only difference is that we're not going to be enslaved to the other nations. And he writes, Ve Yisharu B'yama VeChazak VeChalash B'yachaz L'zulaso, that the strong and the weak will remain together. El Shiboso HaYamim Tukal Al B'nei Adam Parnasasam Ma'od. But in those days, it will be easier for mankind to earn a living. Ad kishe ya'avod ha'adam eza avoda mu'etes shetiyeh yasig tovas gadolah. Until you don't have to work so much, and you can achieve a lot. And we see, I guess, in nowadays the world of automation, that we can amass a tremendous amount of wealth potentially without having to work as hard as we did in previous generations, in previous centuries. Life is becoming much easier, leading towards the Messianic era. It almost seems as if the three curses that God cursed mankind by the sin of Adam, that b'zeas apecha tochalechem, you're going to eat by the sweat of your brow, the fact that be'etzev tel du banim, women are going to have difficulty having children, and v'huyim shalbach, gender inequality, it seems that as time has gone along, we have begun to undo each of these three curses. There's less gender discrimination, less gender inequality. Obviously, there are different roles for men and women, but in terms of gender discrimination, gender inequality, there is less than there used to be. It's easier to earn a parnasa. No longer does it have to be by the sweat of our brow. And it's easier for women to give birth to children. So we see the undoing of these three curses that were issued to Adam and to Chava after the sin of Adam Barishon. And the Rambam writes that in the Messianic age, it will be easy for us to earn a parnasa. And he writes, V'yifsaku ha-kravos v'ha-milchamos, k'mo shemar v'lo yisa goy al-goy charev, and the wars and battles will stop, will cease to exist, as the prophet prophesizes, Velo Yisu, as we see in the Nevi'im, that there's a prophecy of that nation will not raise a sword against another nation. And those people can achieve a tremendous sense of completion of themselves, of their souls, of their lives, tremendous sense of fulfillment during the Messianic era, which will lead to a life of Olam Haba, which that's where we go after we die. V'amashiach yamus, and the Messiah will die. V'yimloch beno, v'en beno, and then his son will rule, and then his grandson will rule. And the Rambam clearly writes that people will die in the Messianic era because it's a natural living. But he writes that during this time, v'gam yarchu chayei b'nei adam, that mankind's life will lengthen. We're going to live longer. Why? Without all the worries and the calamities, we'll have longer lives. And if you think about also, if there's going to be no war, so all the money that's used and all the resources that are used for military defense can be used for medicine. Imagine how far advanced we can be, how much more advanced we can be in health and living longer lives. So this is the Rambam's view, which came clear about the Messianic era as a natural existence. Of course, this is in contrast to someone like the Ramban, who believed, and others who believe, that the Messianic era was a kind of supernatural existence. We're living physically on earth, but there will be no need for eating and drinking. He calls that, for the Ramban, Olam Haba is after the Messianic era, where it's a different type of world, where there'll be no eating, no drinking, no need for it, but we'll have a physical being. We'll physically be alive and we're not going to die. That's the Ramban's position. The reason why the Rambam believes that we are going to die and after the Messianic era is that the Rambam believes that if we have a physical being, if we're a physical being in this world, if we have physical bodies in this world, then we have to act according to the laws of nature. Okay, the resurrection of the dead, that's an exception. That's a supernatural law, a miracle that will take place. But when we're living on this earth, we're going to act according to how people who are alive act, according to the laws of nature. So the Rambam does not contemplate the possibility of living on this earth and not being mortal, and not being subject to death, and not eating and not drinking. No, we're going to eat, we're going to drink, we're going to act normally, but we will be an independent Jewish state, not subservient to other nations. That is the Rambam's view on Techiyas HaMeisim. The last thing I want to speak about is the Rambam's major philosophical work, the Mor Nevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed. It was completed in the year 1200. The Rambam dies in 1204. So the Rambam writes this when he completes it when he's 65, 4 years before he dies. And just to give you a sense of what this Sefer is all about, I'll read you the introduction in English, or part of the introduction in English. He says, "The object of this treatise is to enlighten a religious man who has been trained to believe in the truth of our holy law, who conscientiously fulfills his moral and religious duties, and at the same time has been successful in his philosophical studies. Human reason has attracted him to abide within its sphere, and he finds it difficult to accept as correct the teaching based on the literal interpretation of the law. Hence, he is lost by perplexity and anxiety. If he be guided solely by reason and renounce his previous views, which are based on those expressions, he would consider that he had rejected the fundamental principles of the law. And even if he retains the opinions which were derived from those expressions, and if instead of following his reason, he abandoned his guidance altogether, it would still appear that his religious convictions had suffered loss and injury. For he then would be left with those errors which give rise to fear and anxiety, constant grief, and great perplexity." See, the Rambam believes in his introduction, he writes that his first goal for writing this Mor Nevuchim, this Guide to the Perplexed, is he wants to instruct a religious person who believes in halacha and has studied philosophy, and he's perplexed by the contradictions between the two, between halacha and philosophy, and his goal is to reconcile the contradictions. Then he writes also that the second goal is to explain parables that occur in Tanakh in a meaningful way. more a sort of philosophical interpretation of Tanakh. The Rambam did rule, like the Gemara, that one should not teach Masa Bereishis, the story of creation, and Masa Merkava, the story of the divine chariot, what's going up in Shemayim with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to people for fear that it would result in non-belief. That is why the Rambam wrote his work of Mor Nevuchim in a mysterious style. He makes contradictory statements about the same topic, and he even speaks about it in his introduction. And only a perceptive reader can discover the Rambam's true views on a given issue. The thematic topics that the Rambam discusses include biblical language and exegesis, divine attributes, creation versus eternity, prophecy, divine providence, the mitzvot and human perfection. The Rambam discusses the nature of God and divine attributes. How do you reconcile the notion of multiple divine attributes with one God? And the Rambam basically states that when the Torah states that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is merciful, doesn't mean, it's not a description of God. It means that he acts mercifully. Now, as the Rambam writes in Chelak Aleph, Perek Nun Beis, Kishe Hatarim Chulukan Yinim HaRabim HaNimtzim B'Sfarim HaMorim Olav Yisaleh, when you have a lot of different ideas, many ideas that are found in these works that describe God, He Mitzad Ribe Pu'ulo Sav V'lo Mipnei Riboy Ba'atzmo, they're simply describing God's behaviors, but not God himself. We can't understand God himself. We can say that God acts in a merciful way, in a way that, to our understanding, is merciful. However, essential attributes must be interpreted as negations. The Rambam Chelak Aleph Perek Nun Ches says that Da ki ta'arei Hashem yisparach bishlilus hu ator hamiti, that God, the description of God is negative. That is the truthful description. That if God is said to be existing, it means that he is not non-existent. All we can describe is what God is not. We can't truly understand what God is. The Rambam proves the existence of God. He uses the argument by design that there must be a prime mover, which is God. The Rambam accepts the doctrine of ex nihilo, that the world was created from nothing. This is against Aristotle, who believed in the eternity of the world. And this is a very important principle because it explains the possibility of miracles and similar occurrences. The Rambam speaks about prophecy, and he, let's say, disagrees with someone like Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who writes that God can just reveal a prophecy to any individual. The Rambam believes that our prophecy is determined by the degree of the development of an individual's intellect, that we have to prepare ourselves for prophecy. Now, we can prepare ourselves as much as we can, and God can still prevent us from achieving prophecy. But it requires an individual's development of his personality and his intellect. And once he has done that, so then he is ready to receive the word of God, but God can stop that if he wants. The Rambam discusses Tamei HaMitzvos, the reasons for mitzvos. The Rav Sadia Gaon divided the Torah into two categories: rational commandments, let's say prohibitions against murder and theft, which a human can discover without revelation, revealed commandments, without revelation. And secondly, revealed commandments, such as prayer and the observance of holidays. And this is neutral from the point of view of reason and can be known only through revelation. Now, the Rambam argues that all divine commandments, all mitzvos, are the products of God's wisdom, as opposed to Rav Sadia Gaon, who may hold that revealed commandments are product of God's will rather than his reason. But the Rambam believes that some mitzvos are easily understood and others are only understood with much difficulty. The Rambam explains that one purpose of halacha is the well-being of the soul, of the intellect, through true beliefs, and also the well-being of the body, by which our moral well-being can be achieved. In other words, through beliefs and through engaged in personal morality. And the Rambam explains that many ritual laws were observed and instituted as reactions to pagan practices. For example, chatanis, wool and linen, is a reaction to the pagan practice requiring pagan priests to wear these garments. Certain mitzvos are concessions to historical situations like those dealing with sacrifices. Some people believe that the Rambam believed that since they, in his Tamei HaMitzvos, they're only a concession to historical situations, so therefore in the Messianic era there will be no sacrifices. But that's not true, because the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah writes the laws of the sacrifices. And the Rambam in Mishneh Torah only includes those laws that will be around in Messianic times, even in Messianic times. The Rambam didn't... now, the Rambam, just to give you a sense of the kind of life that the Rambam lived, I want to read to you a letter that the Rambam writes to one of his students, Ibn Tibbon, who wanted to visit him. He translated a lot of the Rambam's works from Arabic into Hebrew, and he wanted to visit the Rambam. And let us read this and listen to this, and you can get a sense of the Rambam's daily schedule. And we can even be, because of this, we can be even more impressed with who the Rambam really is. It really was. This letter to Ibn Tibbon was dated around 1200. And he writes the following: "The Lord God himself knows how I am able to write you this letter. I have had to run away from people, isolating myself in a hidden place. Sometimes I have had to lean against the wall, and at others I have had to write lying down because I am so ill and weak. I am already coming to old age, but with respect to your wish to come visit me here, I rejoice that you would like to come, and I long for your companionship. More than you would be happy to see me, I would be happy to see you, though it worries me that you would have to make the dangerous sea trip. My advice is that you should not risk it. What advantage would you have in coming here, except that you would see me for a few minutes? If you want to have a private audience with me and discuss matters of wisdom, don't even hope for 1 hour during the day or the night. I will write you my daily schedule. I live in Fostat, and the Sultan lives in Cairo. The distance between them is 4,000 cubits, that's a mile and a half. My duties to the Sultan are very heavy. I must see him every morning to check on his health. If one day he doesn't feel well, or one of the princes or the women of his harem doesn't feel well, I cannot leave Cairo that day. It often happens that there is an officer or two who needs me, and I have to attend to healing them all day. Therefore, as a rule, I am in Cairo early each day, and even if nothing unusual happens, by the time I come back to Fostat, half the day is gone. Under no circumstances do I come earlier, and I am ravenously hungry by then. When I come home, my foyer is always full of people, Jews and non-Jews, important people and not, judges and policemen, people who love me and people who hate me, a mixture of people, all of whom have been waiting for me to come home. I get off of my donkey, wash my hands, and go out into the hall to see them. I apologize and ask that they should be kind enough to give me a few minutes to eat. That is the only meal I take in 24 hours. Then I go out to heal them, write them prescriptions and instructions for treating their problems. Patients go in and out until nightfall, and sometimes I swear to you by the Torah, it is 2 hours into the night before they are all gone. I talk to them and prescribe for them even while lying down on my back from exhaustion. And when night begins, I am so weak I cannot even talk anymore. Because of all this, no Jew can come and speak with me in wisdom or have a private audience with me, because I have no time except on Shabbat. On Shabbat, the whole congregation, or at least the majority of it, comes to my house after morning services, and I instruct the members of the community as to what they should do during the entire week. We learn together in a week fashion until the afternoon. Then they all go home. Some of them come back, and I teach more deeply the afternoon and evening prayers. That is my daily schedule, and I've only told you a little of what you would see if you would come. Copy over the tshuva I wrote to you and discuss it with all the scholars in your town. If after that you still want to come, I'd be happy to see you, but you should know you'll not be able to learn with me here. My time is so compressed. May your happiness, my dear pupil, increase and grow great, and may salvation be granted to our afflicted people." I mean, this is simply amazing. The Rambam wrote all that he wrote while having a full day treating the Sultan and treating others for their medical needs. The influence of the Rambam on the future development of Judaism is incalculable. No spiritual leader of the Jewish people in the post-Talmudic period has exercised such influence, both in his own and subsequent generations. Certain doctrines only became uncontested as a result of his works. For example, the Ravid question, the incorporeality of God, is a fundamental principle of faith. But and yet, that doctrine became unanimous after the Rambam. The Rambam also gave rise to the idea of a code of Jewish law that's not structured like the Talmud. For example, the Rif. Rav Yisrael Alfasi wrote a code of Jewish law, but that followed the order of the Gemara. The Rambam wrote his own order, and he paved the way for others to write their own order, not based on the Gemara, based on their own logical organization. For example, the Torah of Yaakov Bala Turim, which was the basis for the order of Rav Yosef Cairo, Shulchan Aruch, which we essentially study today for learning halacha. In both the Mishneh Torah and the Mor Nevuchim, one sees only an unemotional man of intellect, which is very different than in his letters, such as the Geret Teiman, the letter regarding the death of his brother. In the Rambam, we see a model of trying to understand God's will without any negios, without any emotion clouding his judgment. But we find in some of his letters the human element when dealing with the other. The Rambam dies in Egypt in 1204, and he is buried in Tveria.